And welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Marcel is here. Thank you very much, Marcel. And we have upgraded from Ben Clark, and we have Shemi Alcott, former ski racer, Olympian, Ski Sunday superstar. Shems, thanks very much for joining us.
We got newbie. I'm a newbie. Yeah, I use your podcast for research all the time. So now I'm not going to be able to listen to this one because I'll have been in it live.
Yeah, so you'll already know all of the inside and all the tricks of the trade. We have got a decent few races to get through. The Cortina, what a cool race hill that is, but plenty of injuries and plenty of good skiing to get our teeth into. Two downhills and a Super G. The men were over in Garmisch-Partenkirchen for double Super Gs, and the conditions between the days couldn't have been more different, and we'll touch on those, obviously. And then Kronplatz, the giant slalom over in Italy. That was pretty good, but obviously a depleted field. Guys, welcome. Marcel, thank you very much again. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good. I had almost a week peace and quiet from you, so I'm more than happy.
Just keep coming back for more. Keep coming back for more. And Shems,
Are you guys the new dynamic duo? Is that what? Actually, I don't feel that energy from you at all.
Dumb and Dumber, really. Dumb and Dumber.
Which one am I?
The Dumber.
Absolute clown. Shems, mate, how are you? I haven't seen you for ages. Enjoying yourself?
I'm really good. Yeah, really good. Really good. It's been quite an emotional few weeks. I mean, Kitzbühel was just like an attack on the senses. For the first time ever, I actually went into the town thinking at 8 p.m. it would be quite a safe time to go in, and it was like the apocalypse. It was mental. I mean, if you ever want to feel good about yourself and touched by a lot of random people, it's a great place to go.
touched by a load of people. That sounds a bit ominous.
As in they're all very drunk. And actually this year in Kitzbühel, they banned spirits. You know that? To stop people getting so drunk, the crowd getting so drunk. But it meant that the beer was just flowing too fast, too early.
Yeah. No schnapps.
The Austrians always find a way to get like the spirits somewhat into any sort of place.
Yeah, they were probably the ones who invented the, you know, those ski poles where you can unscrew the tip.
Actually, my girlfriend has one of those. I love them. They're really good.
I got my brother a set for his stag do as well. Yeah, good thing to have.
Oh, Howard, you want to be uneven. Advances in technology, you know.
No, well, there you go. Any way to get the booze, and the Austrians will find a way. That is for sure. Booze hounds. Let's talk about Cortina. And I think we probably got to start off with the good skiing rather than all of the chat about the bad skiing. Stephanie Vanier, she back with her second ever World Cup win. The last one she had was Garmisch back in 2019, and it couldn't have come at a more important time for the Austrian Ski Federation. It's been coming, hasn't it? She started to show some better skiing over the last speed rounds, and then all of a sudden, bang, up there, took the win in front of Lara Gutbrami, and then a three-way tie for third. Slightly overshadowed, I think, by all the accidents, but the skiing itself, Shems, was pretty epic.
Yeah, I think that the best girls were incredible. And Venia, I have to say, her technician got it right so well. She skied great, and she took the same line on the delta jump, which is where, you know, about 5% of the girls were crashing into the net. So it was just after you come off the Duca de Aosta, you've got all this speed coming across, and they built up a lot of training and they actually shaved it for the race. But then what happened is we had this melt freeze. So it was a lot faster surface and the girls were all taking a slightly wrong direction off. And then when they landed, they had enough time to find their foot in the net. But Lara Goot, she went first and she took this super aggressive, like pointed the skis down. She flew way further, but then was able to stand on the ski really well. And Venia did the same. She followed that line. Those were the only two girls who actually pulled that line off. And you could see the energy in the start, where there was so much chit chat about changing lines left, right and center. And I think that is where the stronger survived. I don't want to sound too cheesy, but you could definitely see that mental confidence in the girls who were executing what they inspected as opposed to being panicked left, right and center.
Yeah, Marcel, we were talking about it, weren't we? Whilst we were in Eurosport, talking about how, you know, a couple of people crash early on, then the chitter chatter starts. You know, oh, you've got to do something special. You've got to do something different to what you thought you had to do. And actually, 100% you don't. You just got to do what you inspected. You did your training runs. You know what's coming. You just had to be, you know, confident and aggressive with your movements. And too many times we saw people coming into the jump sitting on the toilet effectively, ass down, not getting the press, making a half-assed move, and therefore just then the minute they're taking off, they're already in the back seat, and then trying to find the outside ski when you're in the back seat. And it was ripply, and like you say, Shems, that obviously the snow conditions were more compact than they'd been, but they just left them all at sea.
Yeah, I mean, actually, Lara was really aggressive with that point in the post-race interview. She said that downhill isn't about going a meter here, a meter there. It's about attacking the terrain. And they have got more terrain in that piece. You know, we're so used to Tino Dunn, as you guys know, 100 races there. But they are slightly building more terrain because it's the Olympic hill. And you know that's going to happen. We know that the Olympics always bring something special with the terrain. So what they're doing is they're just adding a bit more rollers. And I did the camera run, and literally every second gate you were getting airtime. So you had to be really loose with your lower body. And the first thing that goes when you see the best girls who you want to watch, I mean, everyone's watching Shiffrin. They think, right, okay, she might not win the race, but she's a really incredible technical skier. So we'll watch her. So as soon as that happened, the seed is planted, and then they're bracing. And then I have to say, Marcel, I thought the Austrians got that really well. I mean, they've obviously had a bit of a hard time lately, but they had a huge amount of mental confidence on that Cortina first day. And Aga was the same. It was messy, but it was fast.
Yeah, I mean, I was very surprised actually to see them so far up, because they were doing well in the last couple of races, I guess. But, you know, Vinir, she's always, I think she was not quite sure why she was so quick, even in all the races. She's like, what the hell has happened here? Which I thought was quite interesting. But, you know, in general, I feel like, you know, the greatest ski racer on earth ever in history. I mean, if she posts, you know, an Instagram post beforehand, it's been like, oh, I had a couple of sketchy moments in training. I mean, you know, it's just, she's just setting herself up to get injured.
Yeah.
And that,
I found that really interesting.
Quite baffling, specifically if you want so many races and, like, you know, I don't think you should be doing that.
I agree. I mean, we salute Mickey for being vulnerable. We love the fact that she lets us in. And, you know, after the Beijing disaster, it was really interesting to see an athlete being so vocal about, you know, their mental health and how they were struggling and how that's influenced their sport. But then she's almost played, like you said, the other reverse game, because before the race, she already pinpointed that she struggled with that and that she needs to make changes. So, like you said, she put it in her own psyche, but I don't know how many millions of followers she's got to see that. It's like the opposite of building yourself up. I'm going to break myself before I go, so my expectations are lowered.
Well, I don't know. Obviously, she was feeling a little bit vulnerable maybe going in, that it was higher speeds and she was a bit nervous. But then I think the minute you put that out there, then you're just... Mm. You know, you plant your seed in yourself, but also your teammates. When you're Michaela Shiffrin and you've got a load of, you know, mostly young guns rising out, the likes, obviously, of what's the lady that crashed and cut her chin on the second? Isabella Wright. Now, you know,
she's
got great talent, but just not able to get it into the finish. You've got a couple of other youngsters that are coming through and just sort of starting their World Cup career. And you're like, just don't need to plant those seeds of doubt in the rest of your team's head. But you're right, like, there's so many of them that crashed. Like, Suter didn't even crash and she did her knee. And then, you know, that ended up going up to the top as well. But it was, I don't know, loads of chat about it in the media, from commentators through to, you know, written journalists talking about, it's too dangerous, it's too much, it's too tough. But how often do we actually talk about wanting to see proper downhills being competed on the women's side of things? You don't want these car parks. You don't want them just being able to tuck from top to bottom. You know, you want them challenging the world's best. And I don't think that course was dangerous. I just think it needed more commitment. And the fact is that, you know, the minute you start taking your foot off the gas, as we all know as former ski racers, that's when you get yourself into issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? I think that we had multiple crashes because we had an early crash and then that planted the seed and then everyone didn't adapt. There was also a lot of chit-chat that there needed to be a second training run, but then we had three races afterwards. So what? Now we're going back to saying we want 5 days back-to-back, which is a big chat we had about Wingen. that was too much. So it's really challenging for the organisers. And that second day, I was supposed to do a camera run that second day and there was no way we should have run that day. Like, the snow was dead and it needed to freeze and there was wind at the top. So actually, they made the right call. And like you said, we want people to be challenged. We do not want injuries, okay? But there's injuries that happen when it's not safe. I did that camera run. I wouldn't have done the camera run if it's not safe. I don't need to prove myself anymore. I just need to talk and try and ski as fast as I can and show people the course. And so I wouldn't have put myself in that risk zone. And it wasn't. The surface was slick. It was icy. And there was fun terrain. And like you said, and Lara was really, really vocal about this. We can't see that as an example of a dangerous downhill and then just race house. Sorry, Marcel. Not a big fan of house. But we can't just go to... So, because that's not what being a downhill is about.
Marcel, go on, mate.
Well, firstly, Shami, well done. You made it all the way to the finish, not like Nicole Hoss.
Oh, God. Do you know how many people told me about her and Zampa? They're like, you're doing the POV. Do you know what happened in Yasna? I'm like, yes, I'm very aware. Can you stop bringing that up, everybody? I don't want to get hurt.
As well, actually, that must be someone who wants to do the POV run instead of you, you know, grabbing your job. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Planting the seeds of doubt.
I did it. Marcel, I did it after Nikki Schmidhofer, and in the start, she said, oh, I'm a bit worried about this. I'm not sure about the speed. I'm like, why are you trying to dirt talk me? We're not racing each other. There's no POV race here.
Yeah, I love the shit chat between the camera runs. In the beginning. Yeah. Like, it's all a mental game still.
We should get to hear that. That you guys should be mic'd up and we should be able to listen in.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in general, I think it's, you know, it's been, there's so much talk about injuries, so much talk about cancelled races, which they don't want to be cancelled, which they want to, you know, put back in the calendar. They don't want to race there. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that. I'm actually a bit fed up with it. Like, just, you know, get to grips with it. It is what it is. It's a dangerous sport. If you hurt yourself, you hurt yourself. You know, no one asks, and you don't have to ski, like, no one asks you. And you know, they're really trying to make it as safe as possible. I'm honestly, I think, just like, get a grip with it.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's like you say, Marcel, it's downhill ski racing and it's dangerous. What else do you want to do? You're going to change the sport if you want to make it safe. It's going to be a different sport.
Those rollers and jumps, I mean, you know, you're just setting yourself up to be injured anyway, so it's no one else's fault. And you can also break. You can break in front of the jump if you want. You know, if you feel not comfortable, do that. I mean, you're gonna lose a lot of time, but no one asks you. Like, it's. I just feel like it's a bit ridiculous.
What, Marcel? Your old man obviously was there with Esther. What was
She was ill.
She was really sick. But what?
Yeah, she's ill, isn't she? She was in hospital for the first 2 days because I trained with her. It was very exciting for me actually. And then
What, you're snowboarding?
That would have been embarrassing.
Especially, no, but I don't know. She's, you know, my dad. You know, my dad. I don't think he, you know, he obviously cares, but he's like downhill. Like, what you want to do?
This is a very unempathetic podcast today.
I'm not even talking about just the woman's side. I'm talking about the men's side as well. Like, I think they should have not done the downhill in Wengen. Everything else, you know, just it is what it is. Like, just ski. Do your best, ski. If you don't want to ski, don't. I mean, it's pretty simple. Because I've never defend the fist, but I think, you know, it's none of their fault this year. You know, what you want to do, like, races getting cancelled. This is like their bigger jumps in there. Like, you know, that's not their fault. It's not their fault that Garmisch is, you know, not that great. So I feel like then coming out of the woodworks, everyone's being like, oh, this is too dangerous, this is that, just like, stop it. No one cares. Really, actually, no one cares. It's terrible.
I think it would be quite powerful, like you said, if the athletes have the onus to say, you know what, I'm not feeling 100% today, I won't race. But I feel there's so much expectation, especially the big names, to always deliver.
Yeah, but
you know, if Schifrin doesn't get on the podium, we're like, oh, what's happened? You know, we don't. And I thought that was great with Charlie Guest early season, actually. Sorry, just to talk about, like, the personal side of an athlete and her talking about why she couldn't deliver and that there was actually something going on behind the shin pads that we should consider. And I think if athletes become more in tune with being healthy and what they can deliver on the day, then they can make better decisions and not start when they're below par or they're tired.
But in that same respect,
I would respect that a lot if someone does that.
Yeah.
Once you race, like, there's nothing to complain about, you know.
Thing is that Kilder was never not going to start. That, you know, we said that already. Like, that second downhill, he was never not going to push out the start gate because he was still fatigued. And the same way, Schifrin was never not going to start Cortina. It's the Olympic downhill track, or going to be the Olympic downhill track. She wants to get track time. She was never not going to start. That wasn't a case of, you know, if Schifrin had pulled out at the start of that race, you'd all be going, I would be too. Like, why is she not starting? Like, what's going on? They're very good, the Schifrin team. They're probably the best at it in terms of picking what races they do and don't do, and for good, you know, whether it's planning for overall titles or planning, you know, for the victories or, you know, the records or whatever. They're very, very good. And they targeted that one for a reason. And you know.
But I actually
sometimes these things happen.
But do you think, like, I don't think the athletes were complaining that much. Like, it was more
not
like,
going in, coming out they were, because of obviously the crashes were there. But I think it's...
I don't think they were complaining. Like, I saw a couple of Austrian interviews and stuff. They were not complaining about it. I mean, obviously they did well, so I guess they have nothing to complain for them.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, many people complained, or did
they? I did get a little bit from Goggia, her saying that she had to use it. She couldn't go full gas. She had to use it as a second training run because she didn't feel comfortable on the skis with the change of snow.
I mean, you know, again, if someone doesn't race, and, you know, because I, you know, I'd say, okay, I don't want to because I'm not feeling comfortable. I think that's quite admirable, actually, if they don't want to. It's obviously not great for them. However, I think once they race, they should be racing and not complaining.
Well, also, it comes back
to that. Having said that again, not that many people complained. I think it's more like the media, and this is what
making a storm in a teacup.
Yeah. It's like, you know, you sit in the finish area, you know, having your cup of tea and complain about the race that other people are doing. It's like, you know, stop it. No one cares.
I think actually more they just look at the percentage of DNFs and they don't even need to watch the race. They make a call that way.
100%.
And also that's really dangerous, especially when you've got another race the next day. You know, you're putting in danger and more fear into the athletes who are having to do another race on that hill.
Well, in the next day, we saw some good skiing. Ragnhild Mowinkel, she took the victory, her first downhill World Cup victory. Really cool. She's definitely been getting, and now you can see off the back of that, the results the next couple of races for her were really, really good. Jackie Wiles from the American team, where did that come from? 0.35 behind in second place. Goggia, 0.44 behind. The big shame of that one was obviously off the back of the first downhill, Grenier out, broke her arm, did a knee. A real, real shame, because her giant slalom has been exceptional again this season. And obviously getting to grips with downhill as well. Another racer that's, you know, now that sort of the train of results has obviously come off the rails and she's going to have to rebuild again. But again, good skiing. Like those women that put in the results, it was all through aggression, good skiing, and making sure that they were committed.
That was a huge crash.
Yeah, they all completely elevated their performance. I think with Mo, that's been waiting to happen forever. She's an amazing technical skier. When she's loose as a goose, she's always fast at reading the terrain, but she tends to kind of brace and overthink. And like you said, it's great to see an athlete take one performance and then just roll with that confidence straight away. And you see that continually. I mean, Jackie's, it's kind of been a really hard comeback for Jackie for a long, long time. I was quite surprised by that performance. I thought her tuck was still a little wide. She's still running a little bit of inside edge. But I think because of that and a bit wishy-washy, like you said, she's actually making a hell of a lot of speed at the top of the turn when she's clean. So she could actually be one to watch now, because if she takes that confidence, narrows up that tuck, gets that pressure on that inside skin to the foreline, she's going to start ripping.
What'd you make, Marcel?
Ragnhild Mowinkel. I love her. I think she's like a great skier. I just love her technique. So I'm really happy to see her on a downhill podium. Also, I quite like Laura Gaucher. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, the French
girl.
She's amazing. She's an amazing skier. I really like her. I think she ended up fourth on that day.
She's technically very good, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very good. Very good.
The way she links her transitions, I don't think she's so good at making speed, but once she's got to speed, she carries it so well. She's got this like feeling under her feet, like Fritz Strobel. I mean, that's showing my age, isn't it? Jesus.
Yeah, they called him the cat.
The Fritz a cat.
Yeah. Gosh, the cat, the left cat.
And then sort of into the Super G. So we don't spend too long. We're already going in on Cortina, but we're obviously big fans of Cortina. And then the Super G, Lara Gut-Bahrami, again, her skiing the last 18 months or so has been flipping amazing. And I love the way that she's still got the drive. She doesn't often give an awful lot away in terms of what she says to the media. She plays everything quite close to her chest, and but she's obviously enjoying herself, and her technique at the moment is right on point. Grenier, podium again, second place, 0.21 off, and then Miradoli back on a podium since she at 2022. So the French team now bringing it on the women's side as well, like Gaucher fourth, like you said, Marcel, then Miradoli third. They don't want to be left out of the party in the French team.
Yeah, I think they're doing, I mean, the French are doing really well this year. Swiss and the French are definitely the best teams in general. I mean, Lara Good, she's really taking the fight to Shiffrin now. I think, you know,
under 100 points, 95 points.
And I actually looked at the races that are upcoming and they're left. There are not many slaloms left.
Mate, you did some research.
Yeah, I did actually. Because I knew on the podcast, I did a bit of research. But what do you mean? I used to research, even when we do the commentary, I'm like...
Mate, you take one sheet. You take one sheet into the commentary box. It's one that I've printed out for you.
Okay, guys, let it go. Let it go. Calm down. Round one.
No, but I think... I do think Lara Good has an incredible chance to win the overall this year. 100%. Because there's
some massive pressure on Shiffrin to come back, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. But Lara's so level-headed. She's so cool as a cucumber. You can't read her. You can't read when she's happy. You can't read when she's sad. You know, she's not all over Instagram. She's just focused and, like you said, loving it. And for me, she's lost that drift and punch that she used to have. Her timing right now is just exquisite. Like, she knows exactly when to stand on the ski and how to bring that ski into the turn. And it's amazing.
I think she's just upped the feeling. I think she's just skiing with way more feeling. I think... You know, in her early days, she had it because she was new and young and going for it, then sort of lost it in the middle with just trying the same thing again. And now it seems to be like she's got a bit more touch back on and can feel what's happening and make more adjustments to what's actually going on rather than just sticking with a game plan. I love it. I think I'm so pleased that she's, you know, bringing the fight because it's a totally different story than pretty much everybody else within the World Cup tour for the women. I just think it's really good. Really pleased that she's in.
Yeah.
And performing.
Obviously, she has 10 podiums already this year. That's pretty impressive. So second best season.
Do you guys think that actually off the back of that, obviously her win in Kronplatz, we've not talked about just yet, but do you think that Michaela Shiffrin is under pressure to come back sooner than she would do? Or do you think she's, you know, her team are just going to be like, we're sticking to our plan this year?
I think it'll go the other way. I think that she'll see that she's being caught really quickly and then take her time with it. I think that knew that she was...
Back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, look at the long-term plan for her. That's what it's all about. Like, we know she's going to get to those 100 wins next year. We know it's going to happen. And I think that it will take the pressure off that someone is charging at her and it's not... There's no guarantee with it anymore. I think it'll be like, you know what? Okay, I'll go and hang out with Kilda. His calf looks like...
Oh, dude,
my God.
That picture on his Instagram, sorry. Jesus.
I shared it on my Instagram story for 3 seconds and Dougie, my husband, went, you can't share that. That is, I mean, it does, I feel terrible that I went on television and said, he's all good, guys. He's got a cut and a dislocated
it's just
shoulder.
A scratch.
That is not a cut. That is not a cut.
Did you hear? He was giving an interview recently and he was like, well, you know, people thought I do have a cut, but this is like, this is probably the worst injury I've ever seen in my life.
His calf was hanging off.
Horrendous. Horrendous. And he can't even move his toes. Cut his like nerves and stuff. It's disgusting.
I mean, right. I did also think he has a lot of muscle. I mean, you saw a lot of muscle coming out his leg in that photo. We have to disclose, don't go and look at this unless you're okay with stuff. Because he has posted it, but it is nasty.
It really is. Yeah. Really is nasty. But, you know, I mean...
Just picturing it.
He said it's like, it's the pain that he's still in is incredible. I mean, I feel really sorry for him because that is getting easy back from.
Yeah.
You know, Marcel, how we knew it was bad? I was in the finish when he crashed and he didn't make a sound.
Oh,
I mean, no scream, nothing. I mean, that's it almost... And I have to say a real big shout out to the Swiss crowds because, you know, the Wengen cauldron... And everyone was going crazy after Odie came down. You could hear a pin drop for 40 minutes, like the respect of them. But that was the scariest thing, that when he crashed, There was not one noise. I mean, he must have been in a blackout kind of pain with that,
yeah.
but he didn't make a sound, and you could hear it. You know, Ed, they're just there. It's like 30 it's so, meters.
The Swiss fans they are incredible,
unbelievable,
and they stay there from the, you know, it's famed, but they stay there from the beginning to the end. They go almost as mad for the first guy as they do for the last, irrespective of what flag they ski under.
I always say that, like, the Swiss fans are definitely the best fans. I'm sorry, I'm Austrian, but it's true. Like, literally, it's true.
Yeah.
The Austrians, like, if you go to, I mean, that's the VIPs, like, obviously they leave after 30, so there's like no one understands after 30.
They all leave with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like the entourage of Schwarzenegger go. And they'd never come back.
To be fair, I'd follow him as well. If
hang on a minute. You can't attack Schwarzenegger. You can attack any other VIP, not Schwarzenegger.
You cross the line, Alcott.
Yeah, holy. The holy grail of Austria, that one.
I tried to touch him, Marcel. I was like, no, I didn't. Could touch. I did. But it was so uncool. I was really uncool. Okay, guys.
I think everybody.
Let's move on.
My only two goals in life are to win a gold medal at the Olympics and talk to Arnold Schwarzenegger and get a picture, and none of them have actually come true. So, you know, what am I even doing here?
Just on the Schwarzenegger thing, how flipping cool would it be for those downhill, and it is more the downhillers, but the downhill the guys that win the downhills, that Schwarzenegger is coming to you to talk to you, coming to you to shake your hand, coming to you because he's like, holy crap, dude, like, how epic was that? Amazing. Well done. Like, that is just mind blowing.
But they let Schwarzenegger in the zone. I was standing next to Franz Klammer trying to get in, and they stopped him. They would not let him in to go and chat with the athlete, Klammer. I'm like, are you serious? This is Klammer. Klammer got denied for like 5-10 minutes. And then the Fizz guys ran over like, no, he can definitely come in. Hmm. Whereas Schwarzenegger goes in with his bodyguards, who are the scariest looking men I've ever seen in my life. Sorry to be stereotypes.
Guys, have you got anything to add on Cortina before we move across?
No, I mean, it's an epic, it's a wonderful hill. I worry about how they're going to manage the Olympics because the finish area is so high up the hill and you're getting people up by coaches, then by the chairlift. So I think there's some kind of infrastructure that needs to change to capitalize on people seeing that amazing hill. I think that's something that they've got to organize.
But I was really, you know, obviously with the downhills that got cancelled this weekend from Chamonix, I was really hoping that somehow we'd be able to squeeze in and the men would be over in Cortina.
I'd love to see them there. It's like such a good hill, even for, you know, for men as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great last year when they put the races on there. I agree.
Yeah.
I think the reason, sorry, I do say I kind of know the reason why they can't do that, actually. Because when we were there, there was banners everywhere saying snow difference, and it was highlighting the no difference. So they've got para ski races on right now, which I thought was really cool. They went straight from the Women's World Cup to the Para World Cup, which actually we've done really well in. But that's why I think the men can't get back there right now.
Well, good that they didn't change it up, I guess. But
remember when they did, was it the championships, right? When they went on the other side and skied there.
Yeah.
I thought that was a bit disastrous, actually.
Which was the French guy who did that crazy 180?
Was it Mousseton?
Oh my God. That was so cool.
Like the flat spin.
Like a butter 180, yeah.
You've been spending too much time with Ed Lee. Butter this.
I know.
Look at you pretending to be all, I don't even know what the right word is. I don't know, baggy clothed. whilst the women were over on an epically difficult but very doable hill, the men were over in Garmisch-Partenkirchen for double super G, and the weather gods really didn't play ball. The first race, it was like Scotland in the middle of autumn. It was sorry, Scotland, just a little dig, you know, it was absolutely torrential rain, properly pouring down. It isn't the most difficult of hills, but when it is properly icy, there's lots of terrain, there's lots of good stuff about that hill. But with the slower speeds that obviously is there thanks to the weather, it was a little bit tame, and they chucked a mountain of salt on it. And actually, in those conditions, they did really, really well to actually get the race away and for it to be relatively even from start to finish. Nils Allegra took a very emotional first ever World Cup podium. It actually really got me the way that he, you know, let it all out. You know, you work for your whole career, you dream of this dream that barely anybody actually gets to achieve. And he did it and he let it all out. I thought it was wicked. Guglielmo Bosca picking up his first ever podium. It looked like he was going to take the win, didn't it? 1800s in front. Mayar matched his PB in Super G with a third place. Odomat stopped his run of World Cup's Super G podiums. He's even with Hermann Maier. He was supposed to go one clear to make it 13 wins in a row. He was off the podium, but by only 0.03 of a second. Shems, you know, when it's like that in those sorts of conditions, surely you just got to race it. You know, there's not too much you can do about it, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's quite challenging for timing because the ski takes a different amount of speed to come around. And that's what I thought when I watched it. It was like there was a bit, you've got to be patient and you've got to wait. You can't have too much activity. And we're used to, especially this winter, seeing the male races in all disciplines being unbelievably, you know, active and electric with that slingshot transition and always moving forward. And it didn't seem like that. It seemed like it was just more about kind of patience and building the turn. There was no aggression needed. And I think that's why we got different winners. But I thought Allegra, like Nils, he's been kind of tapping away for a little bit of time. And I think that all the coaches in the French team always say he's always been one of the guys to watch in training. He's super fast, but he hasn't delivered in the race. So I think that's almost why it was so emotional for him, because he, in his own words, he didn't choke. He like completely delivered. And I think actually for him, we'll see him fast on everything now. It won't just be on that salted surface that we so often attach to different ski brands. Yeah.
Marcel, obviously you and I were in the box. What did you, you know, take away from it? And have you sort of thought anything different in terms of since then? Obviously we heard it wasn't just the hill that was salty. Odomat was pretty salty after the end of that one, wasn't he? Saying that shouldn't be a World Cup hill. It was, you know, that wasn't a World Cup. You know, World Cups are different. It's supposed to be across the board from steep to icy to, you know, we ski in the spring on softer snow. We have different types of hills for a reason, right? Or is that just...
Didn't Manny Fella do that about Flakkau Slalom last year and then he went and won it?
The Meadows.
Yeah. He did the same, didn't he?
Good old fella. Mr. Consistent, he says.
Go on, Marcel. Yeah. Go on. Talk to us about this one then.
I mean, I guess it was what it was. So you know, you got to ski it, but it's... I don't know why, but I don't think they started from the start that you're supposed to be starting, are they? Like,
it was a bit lower, wasn't it? It wasn't where they started, where we started World Champs.
It's usually it like goes into that steep bit and then onto the left, like a big left, right for the turn. I think if they started there, it'd be a lot more interesting because it's another 15 seconds or 20 seconds. It's a bit low, that start. I think Garmisch is... That one wasn't great, I have to say. It was not great. But when it's all the way from top, I like downhill in Garmisch, but you know, when you go over like this big jump at the end, like when it's icy and it's really tough. It wasn't that tough. And it was so close as well. What was it again? 1.5 seconds for the first 30.
Yeah. 1.36, I think it was, to the 30.
No mistakes in there. I thought the Swiss did incredibly well as a team. I think they had about 7 or so in the top 15. So they had a brilliant day, especially the young guys, which I love to see. That Franjo and what's the other guy called? Boisse, I know, or something.
Boisse, was he sixth or ninth? Was he or something the first day?
He was 12th, and Franjo van Almen was 9th out of the top 30 with the bib. So that was pretty impressive because it was tough, and we watched it in commentary. And at the end, I mean, it was not nice to ski anymore. Do you remember?
Mate, it was horrible. But that's the first time.
I think Garmisch actually can be a great hill when it's Bluebird, because when it's Bluebird, it's really dark on the hill. Yeah, so you get loads of speed and you can't see the terrain. So they use a huge amount of blue dye in Garmisch. So it can be an amazing downhill when the conditions are great. But you've got to, like you said, Marcel, you've got to have a lot of speed coming into that top flat. Otherwise, there's just nothing there. There's no terrain
it's just
to work
pedestrian
on
for like 20 seconds until you get to that breakover to the icefall. Mm.
But then, you know, I totally agree with you, Shemi. You have to be a lot more patient, and you have to actually stand on your outside ski, because we saw a lot of races, you know, they they get away with it on, you know, on treks where it's hard and maybe a bit steep for more speed. Not on this one. That you couldn't get away with anything really. So you had to be very clean. I thought Audemars was not, you know, he wasn't clean skiing at all. Like, not on the second day either, I guess. But you know, he's...
but that clean sort of skiing. It, the moment he's definitely pushing a lot harder than he has to. You saw it, obviously, the mistake that he did in when we looked at Saalbach, the mistake obviously that he made. But there's also like other runs that he's been making now. Is not the sort of, you know, swan or duck with the feet working really hard underneath.
Yeah, he's gone from like being really, you know, aggressive and making mistakes to then being super consistent and
effortlessly
now,
quick.
Like now he needs to put a bit more effort in, or he maybe wants to put more effort in. I don't know. Maybe he's getting bored of being the winner all the time. So he's like, ah, just, you know, risk a bit more, make it a bit
more. But that was the first time I have to say that I was, I don't know, a little disappointed by the interview. Like, we know that it wasn't the best of races. Most of that, I think, was down to conditions. Obviously, yes, they fizz keep picking to go there, and it is only, what, 900 metres above sea or whatever it is there. Not very high. So I get that. But I just feel like they're just like, dude, you win all the time. Take it on the chin. You weren't the best there. You weren't even on the podium. Take it on the chin. Don't take away from the other guys that are around you. Especially yeah. One of them was your teammate. It was the first time I've heard that and gone, I don't think he needed to do that interview. Tell his mates, tell his coaches, tell his whatever. But I just don't feel he needs to put that one out there. I felt that was a bit off.
I was really surprised by that, actually, because I thought he's grown so much in interviews and honesty and congratulating peers that I totally agree. Like, it took away the magic. And that's ski racing. Like, that's why our sport is one of the best in the world, because we're racing on completely different surfaces all the time. We have to learn to adapt. We're skiing different terrain. And a winner can do it all. And we know that that's not a technique that everyone can have, but you've got to know your weaknesses as well. And I think for him, it's like, right, that's my opportunity for improvement. Look at what's happening to the snow everywhere. We're going to have to learn to ski on wet, salted snow. So that is where he needs to go away and work on that. And I think it's good to have stuff to work on.
I agree. Maybe we see the new Christofferson, actually. He's so calm these days. But, you know, the only thing that I would definitely criticize was, and I get it, it's snow, and it's tricky, but the course setting, I mean, it was rough and bumpy anyway, but that course setting was just absolute rubbish. I think they could have done it, made it a bit more interesting, a couple more turns, you know, it was just straight down, really.
But it was different the second day with more speed, so they obviously didn't adapt to the fact that it was going to be slow speed, because actually the second day with a very similar course, like, there was a lot more in it, but the snow was quicker. So I think you're probably right. I don't think I can't remember who set the first day. Yeah. It was Norway.
Italian set the first one, Norway set the second one.
Well, there you go. I just feel like, yeah, maybe they just didn't adapt to the conditions, maybe.
I mean, it's tough with the conditions, obviously. You need to make sure that you're not going to hurt anyone by setting a shit, like, you know, a trickier course. But at least in the steep, they could have done a bit something to it, because there was, you know, absolutely nothing. I think that was a bit of a shame, actually.
Marcel, are you the new Kostelich of course setting?
I am. Yeah, I do. I have skied a couple of Kostelich courses in my life, and I'm not sure if I always enjoyed them, really. I don't think I did.
I think he was the only one that did.
I do remember that he was setting a course. That was, I mean, probably not for him so funny, but it was so icy in Ad- and he was literally, I was inspecting, and he all of a sudden, like, phew, all the way into net, the old Kostelich, right next to me, because he could not. But he set a course, and it was literally 127, 25, something like that. Next course was like 111. I was like, bloody hell, that is tough.
I used to do that with a weight jacket on. I used to do that with his weight jacket on.
Back in the day, we talked
about
that.
And they used to tape one of their eyes as well to train each eye individually when he skied slalom. It's mental. Yeah.
They went to this place in Austria, and we all know it, Innerkrems. And they
loved it there.
From the top to the bottom, it was about 110 slalom gates or something, and they weight vests on, maybe even ice taped, potentially even walking up. Like, sometimes I think they, when they were younger, walk up again, which is, I mean, you know, in the end, they were both successful. Maybe the way they went there was a bit questionable at times, but. Some might would. These days, people will probably call the police and be like, "Hey, what is this guy doing to his kids?" Like,
exactly.
They'd
have been taken away. The second day was definitely better, but I think mostly due to the fact that it was cold overnight, it was clear overnight. So actually, the snow went pretty good. It wasn't properly bulletproof like we'd like it to be, but it was certainly a lot harder. Odermatt was back on form, won the race by 0.3 over Haaser for his second of the season. And then Von Allmann of the Swiss team. I mean, it was his,
love
I think
him.
His 13th World Cup start. Like, yeah. What on earth? I actually already don't like him. How do you get on? How are you that good that quickly without like having to do the graft? He's not spent any time coming like in the last four or five people. And he was like 0.6 off his first win. Just disgusting ability.
He is such a good guy. He's such a nice guy. He gives everyone love and support. Like, he's such a team player. When you see him in the finish area, he's always going over to, like, even when he skis well, he goes over to the guys who are disappointed, or everyone. Like, you can see he's such a geller. And I think it's just expectations are like, hey, I'm on the World Cup, I'm having fun, and then look what happens. It's just incredible. And it's really nice to see someone on the men's tour, I think, Ed, come through that quickly and kind of keep everyone on their toes.
Yeah, some would say cool, some would say annoying.
Okay, let it go,
jealous.
Ed. When did you retire?
Jealous. Jealous. Much far too jealous of somebody so talented so quickly. I spent far too long trying to be even a tenth that quick. But no, it was really cool. And I just love, you know, came down there, I think he put Kriechmeier off the podium, didn't he? And just wicked. Like, first time inside the third. So the points he scored the previous day put him inside the World Cup top 30 and then took advantage of it. It was just wicked. Absolutely, really, really cool.
And what was interesting is, like, both days, people with 16 and 7, well, the 17 in the second day, they both went onto the podium. So, you know, after slipping the course, it was I wouldn't say that, potentially an advantage, maybe.
Ask Christofferson.
Yeah, it's not trip number one. Where did trip number one end up, actually? 39th. Of course it's the bib number one.
Then. It was Sander. Was it Sander went first?
I mean, maybe. But you know what?
Local boy.
To Haaser as well, actually. He's a great skier. You can't really see that, you know, he's doing much. But he
under the radar, isn't he?
He's very much under
I
the radar.
I feel like Haaser, Marcel, loads the inside ski really a lot compared to a lot of the other guys. Like, he's got that kind of feeling to have that massive pendulum inside knee. It's really like short into the turn, I always think, with him.
Yes, he has quite wide stance as well, actually, doesn't he?
Mm. Yeah.
It's good for him because he's, you know, super cheap, downhill now a bit, giant slalom. I mean, he's certainly, I guess he's even the best of the Austrians in the standings. No, maybe Kriechmeier is, but...
he's third. He's third after Kriechmeier.
Has always been a good skier. And as you said, you know, using that inside ski does help. But sometimes, you know, people...
Risky.
Well, on those softer conditions, you can afford it, can't you? And it was probably better because you're, you know, helping to take a little bit of the weight off the outside and didn't dig into softer snow. So, you know, came to his own. It's good for him. I think he just goes under the radar. You know, one of those where you're, you know, you almost, you're starting to, and you should expect it, but one of those where you're like, oh, bang, where's that come from? And you're like, well, he's been like sixth and seventh and eighth basically the whole season long, but just doesn't necessarily.
Oh, Rivarado is very good as well, actually. He was very good.
Yeah.
Mate, how good is that? Like, three points in different, you know, three different World Cup points in the three disciplines he skis, you know, all of a sudden going from just
crazy.
A PS skier where he's sort of struggled to really push on as much as he should have done, probably, with his technique and how technically good he is. And now all of a sudden he's going, right, well, I'm just going to do it in all the disciplines now.
We said that. I think in super chin downhill, it helps him a bit that he doesn't move his hip so far in and his ski so far out. Like, he keeps them more under him.
The angles are less.
Which is a lot less angle.
Yeah.
In giant slalom, I think it's just you go too far. Like, you make too many meters. And in speed, he doesn't need to do it because, you know, the gravity.
It's just going
to
be slow. Straight up. You're just not going to be quick with those angles. Shem,
but also, I think he's managing his expectations. Like, watching him in Adelboden, he just threw himself down the pitch. He had no respect. He had no he didn't really care because he's not a slalom skier. And when he qualified, he was like, oh my God, I can do it all. Like, I can transfer these skills. And it was nice because I feel like he's always had a little bit of touch of arrogance about him. And he seems to have kind of grown into his role in the US ski team, I think, because Ted quit and Ted moved on and then Tommy Ford got injured. And it was like, right, it was all about him and it was almost too much for him to take. Yeah. And so now he's like, he's just come to his own and he looks like he's found his feet and everything.
He's certainly looking way more comfortable, isn't he? And well, obviously in the two new disciplines, but obviously I think that's obviously rubbed the right way for his GS as well. Shems, just quickly on Sarazan and what you think he is going to be able to do the rest of this year, if because he was 11th and then DNF in Garmisch, obviously off the back of what was an incredible run of classics with Bormio, Wengen and Kitzbühel. And then how do you see him being able, obviously relatively recently to the best of his ability and up to the top of the standings and stuff and winning races, how do you think he deals with this first setback after those highs?
I think it's a really good thing to happen. I think he had this kind of stratospheric rise to skiing so bloody well. Like at Kitzbühel, I don't think I've ever seen anyone ski so connected to the terrain. He made it look easy. It was unbelievable. And just the emotional high that he deserved to have and that he partied with, and we saw everything that happened afterwards. I think he needed this to realize, okay, I still have to work for it. It's not granted that I'm always going to be amongst the big guys. And actually, I think that was good for Odermatt as well on the first day. I think that these reality checks are really important. I know we're going to talk about Kronplatz in a minute, but it was the same for Alice coming in and skiing so, so well in giant slalom and then taking a few years to come back to it. I think you, when you go up really fast in our sport and you find that perfect run, which we know doesn't really exist, I think it's really important to take the pace off or have the pace taken off by others and realize you are infallible to kind of keep the respect and that graft that keeps you at the top.
Marcel, anything to add on that one? Do you see it any different?
No, absolutely nothing to add. That's very good. I agree with that.
Good. Completely. Good. Man of many words. So from the tricky conditions that were over in Garmisch-Partenkirchen, the women raced Kronplatz for their giant slalom on what is, I really enjoy watching him on ski on that hill. He's got a lot of terrain, a lot of good stuff. It's dark as well. It's snow changes quite a lot on the way down with the sunshine. And it was a really good race. Lara Gutbarami absolutely smashed it. Absolutely smashed it. First run, she was leading by like nearly six tenths of a second. And then the second run, she just absolutely turned it up. Robinson and Hector were tied for second place. Robinson, great to see her finding consistency. I think it's her third podium of the season. Not the top step yet, but third podium. And then Hector backing up her sort of resurgence of form, because that win that she had in Jasna was her first victory on the World Cup since the last race before the Olympic Games. Obviously, then she was Olympic champion, but then she's been nowhere. And I think that was, and it's good and important that she got back on the podium. Yes, probably further off than she would have liked, but good to see her back on the podium. Shami, did you ever race on that hill, or was that too recently added to the calendar?
No, but I agree with you. No, I think it looks like a wicked hill. Like, I agree, all the lovely terrain, a little bit of compression in giant slalom, which I really like to see. And, you know, we've got a couple of compressions in Kranjska-Gora, but a lot of the hills, you know, find that kind of flow all the way down. But I think in giant slalom, it's really lovely to see that extension and retraction. And I thought they skied it really well. Like, I thought the level, and I guess everyone was concerned about some of the big names not being there, but I thought it opened up the opportunity to others to believe in themselves and to all raise their game, which I love to see.
Marcel?
Yeah, I mean, we've skied there in European Cup. It's a lovely hill. Like, it's really, really nice. I remember they had prize money for the quickest intermediate time. So everyone was like going full speed on the flex. And just, you know, it doesn't matter if you finish or not. Just bottle it out. You get fastest intermediate. Who gives a shit?
It's hilarious.
Oh, it's a really good race, actually. I love it. And that steep part, it's bloody steep there. It is.
Well,
really
before steep. the in the middle or the bit to the bottom?
No, when you go on the rolly bit on top, then it's a bit steeper, mid steep, and then you go into that really steep bit before the gate or that.
Yeah.
Really
okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That is proper steep there. That is proper steep.
Probably like Solden steep.
I think even more. I think it's almost like Val d'Isère steep there. It's a really challenging hill, and they've skied incredibly well. The first two, three, obviously, anyway. But I love Lara Kulturi. I think she's amazing. She's such a good skier.
And comeback from injury as well. Like, this is her comeback season as well.
Baby, I mean, she could still do the Junior World Championships.
She's racing. She's racing tomorrow. Yeah.
The tech, yeah. I love her progression. See, I think that she's got the ability to win. She's proven that on her second runs, but I think she shouldn't. I think actually her kind of progression through the stages and that maturity she's gaining psychologically, especially like you said, being so young and coming back from injury. I think you can see her feeling on her skis is unbelievable. And that's a lot to do with her ice skating. Do you guys know she's an incredible figure skater? So she could have gone and done that, and she still does it a lot. And I think that feeling she has will never go away. And that's why she came back from injury so quickly. But she's a great skier, really cool skier.
It's obviously pretty incredible. Now she's in top 30, but she wasn't in top 30 for a long time. And she still always qualified, didn't have like
every time
a five or a win or something like that, or it'd be top five or a win. But she's, as you said, steady progression. I mean, I don't think people realize she's done her first fifth season last year, which is no one ever, I think, would have just done the first fifth ski season and then come into World Cup straight away, not even bothered doing any fifth races. I mean, it's incredible.
It's just the only thing is how she's going to deal with the pressure, I think, and expectation that's obviously building and building and building, and whether, she's obviously with her mum and her background, she's got, understands the world of ski racing, but that would be the only thing, because all of a sudden she is the next Michaela Schifrin in inverted commas, 17 years old, it won't be long till she wins.
I think she's got a good team, good management. I mean, it makes me feel really old because I remember being in Cortina when her mom Ceccarelli was breastfeeding her in the start gate when she was still trying to race, the only woman I've ever seen do this. And then she gives Lara to the dad, puts the breast pads in, and then goes and races the World Cup. I mean, it was crazy. So I guess there's something definitely in the genes there. I'm absolutely mad. But she definitely wants to do it. And that's what I love. You often see these child prodigies who are born in the system where they have to do it. Whereas with Lara, you really get the feeling that she loves this. Like, she is driving that brand. I have to say brand because there's definitely a big brand behind it. But it's all her.
Yeah, but it is all her. She's already very good at all the media stuff. She gives very good interviews. That's the only thing that, like, it's
you want to see her let loose, Ed?
Well, it's just the expectation. I think, the fact that she's, very polished already. It's been, she's on that conveyor belt. She's part of this very, like you said, I can't remember the word you just used, Shem, but the group.
The brand
that she's very on brand. Yeah. She's very, it's a big team pushing and helping. And I just, that would be my only, what do I know? But that would be my only thing that I'd be like, well, she's so young and to be so good and so like just polished already. That's probably the thing more than maybe how good she is.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, talking about being polished and on brand, I interviewed Lucas Brathen the other day and it was like a media machine. Every answer was like brand this, brand that. Sorry, Ed, you're shaking your head. Should I not have brought him up?
was he wearing a headscarf?
A cowboy hat?
Oh my God,
hat,
he was wearing everything. But I was just trying to get like something real and emotional. And he's so smart and he's so in tune with this path that he's taking.
I just don't think you get, there's nothing real. It doesn't feel like, I mean, maybe that's just, I've never met him, so I couldn't say. But just the stuff you see, it just seems all so script, like almost scripted. It just seems so like I don't know.
People love him. Like, I actually got angry in Kitzbühel because when Dave Riding came down, the second Asylum obviously stomped it, we're all going wild. Dave sits in the winner's blocks and then the crowd go even crazier for something, and I'm like, what's happened? And it's because Lucas has walked into the finish area and it's all about him, and I'm like, don't you dare take this moment away from our Dave.
Well, on that, Billy was never even on TV in the red chair. What the hell was that about? No, Laurie. Which one was it? I can't even remember.
Laurie. I got a shot of Laurie. I did the old screaming fan thing, trying to get him to look at me, but he's just looking at the crowd. Trying to find his fiance, I think.
Yeah, trying to do kiss cam again.
Oh no, it's Shemmy again.
But yeah, the only thing, Marcel, what about that GS? Do you think, I was slightly disappointed in, because there was, it was less starters, obviously less, some big names missing, Grenier, Nogis in. So a lot of the top seven weren't in. And the people that were in that don't normally start in the top seven, I just think they failed to take a massive opportunity of a good start number. You didn't see anybody, it didn't feel like you saw anybody really go, man, I'm in the top seven. I shouldn't be, you know, I normally don't start here. I could be 15 and I'm starting two or three, or whatever they were.
Yeah, clearly number one was not a good shot again. Only came fourth, so that's a big issue. no, you know, I don't know. It's like, it's tricky. I guess sometimes when you get into by luck, you're like, oh, shit, now I'm in seven or top 15, like pressure's on. Because the worst thing that can happen to you is when you come into the finish and you're in like top seven or top 15 and you're literally dead last. I think that's the worst place to be. And, you know, that gives you pressure because everyone watches the top. Anyone who watches ski racing or just switches on, just at least watches the top 15 and that's where you're in. And you, if you suck, it's a lot of pressure.
Everyone knows.
It's true. No, that is for sure. I mean, it's tough.
Yeah, I really agree, actually. I think that those athletes didn't expect to be there. There was no rule book that said that suddenly we were going to have this influx of very talented athletes who were injured. You know, they're thinking, they're chipping away at it, and suddenly everyone's like, oh, yeah, you're going to get it. Yeah, and like you said, Marcel, like coming down seventh into seventh by quite a margin, you're like, oh, God, this is, you know, you do. You have that moment of, I need to pretend to be upset. But I don't really know what's happened because this is probably an okay performance because normally I'd be starting 16.
And the thing is, you know, when you're like, I guess it's even worse because a lot of people there's a reason why they're not usually in there. You know, they're not at that stage yet.
Mm.
But then you come in, that's the worst bit. When you come in, like, let's say you're 18th and you just drop into 15 and you start with eight. I'm like, all seven in front of you, you go as eighth. And you just absolutely suck. And then you're like, oh my God, what am I doing here? Because at 18, everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's not too bad for her or him.
Yeah, you're right. Watching like the really quick guys go out. It's probably like whoever it was that went after Odemet on the second run of that of giant slalom in Schladming. And you're like, yeah, I'm in like 10th position. I'm going to do really well today. Odemet goes down, absolutely demolishes everybody. And you're like, oh crap, now I've got to follow that down. You're like, 2 seconds off. You're like, yeah, but everybody else was only like 1.5 seconds off.
That's a tough place to be. That's a tough place to be.
That's a fair. That is a fair point. Maybe that's the way I should see it. Great second run and great performance. The only Austrian performance the whole weekend. Scheib somehow. The Austrians. I just remember watching that finish list, and they were like 29th, 28th, 27th, 24th, and then Gritsch didn't even make it in. And well, all of a sudden, Scheib pulled it out the second round.
Well, let me add to this. At least they made it into the top 30, which is an improvement from Jasna, for example.
Steps in the right direction.
Take it day by day.
But Scheib was pretty good, though, wasn't she? She actually not too far off the podium in the end, really. I mean, time-wise, position.
The only one that's actually really concerning is Lienzberger. I don't know what she's doing.
Like, she's just not, her legs don't move. She don't move at all.
Not at all. It's a real shame, actually. Real shame.
Like, it doesn't look like she's even got the answers to, which it's not, you know, if you do a couple of good turns, do some bad stuff, and then you're slow, or, you know,
yeah, she's not even making mistakes.
It's not even like, there's not even like two or three turns down there that look or feel good.
As you said, she's literally just, you know, moving her leg out and then just does nothing, just moves it to the other side, nothing.
But I think the way she skied, she's always relied so much on the confidence to build that angle. And she's got that kind of long, straight back. So when she doesn't have the confidence to do that angle and she's not got those shoulders forward, there is nothing working the front of her ski. Yeah. Like, she's probably working the midfoot of the ski at best.
I think they have really, I don't know what they have said to her, but nothing works together anymore. She was so good. She was, you know, so clean. Mm. It's really bending that ski. But I guess they have, or maybe she has done it herself, you know, really gone to her head now. And it's super tricky. I mean, she had a good result. I think won third place in slalom this year or something. That was good.
Yeah, early.
Because I think she, she's definitely the talent, most talented of all of them. No disrespect to anyone else, but obviously she's had, you know, some really good results in the past. Mm-hmm.
Before we move and look at the slam coming this weekend, just quickly, the women's titles are pretty tight. Overall, Schifrin leads Goop by only 95 points. Downhill, Stefanir is now only 89 points behind Godger. Super G, Goop leads. Hooters 10 points behind. Brignoni is 74 points behind. Godger is 83 points behind. And in giant slalom, Goot leads, and then Brignoni is 85 points back. So the titles are all up for grabs, which is awesome. It's so good. It's, you know, much more than the men's side. Giant slalom's wrapped up. Super G's practically wrapped up now, where there's only like two rounds left. And the downhill likewise. So, you know, this is this.
Cancel all the men's races. Put some more women racing in there. That's what you want to see.
Yes. I love this woke stuff.
So that's good. So it's exciting. Good stuff. And yeah, maybe you're right, Shems. It'd be interesting to see how Schifrin ends up playing this one out, whether she goes, no, I'm coming back. This overall title is mine and I'm racing back to get it. Or does she go, fine, you can have it this year. Yeah. And I'll just smash you all next year.
We'll it's see. Very psychological, and like you said, I love to see all this competition. Like, you want to see it to the wire, and we haven't seen much to the wire for the last few seasons in many disciplines. So, yeah, let's keep everyone interested whilst the snow's still here.
Yes, exactly. Right. Well, the only race that we've got to look at this coming weekend, the women have got the weekend off. The Speedmen have got their weekend off. It's only the Tech boys, only the slalom guys that are racing. And we are in Chamonix for slalom action. Shems, you are in Chamonix. What is the weather like? Is it as bad as we're led to believe?
So the temperature has just dropped, which is a bonus. We're looking at a white strip of snow in a very green mountain. I was surprised that the downhill was cancelled, actually. I've been driving through the valley quite a lot, and they were making massive efforts. I mean, I think it's tragic that they haven't been able to run the downhill right now, because what we've seen is that the French have not been interested in skiing for quite a long time, even with the likes of Johan Clary. Yeah, there's been pockets of races that they'll follow and results they'll back up on. But this season, across the board, the French are exciting. I mean, you're seeing all the young slalom guys coming through, and with Sarrazin, there's just so much interest again. And you're in French resorts and people are talking about alpine skiing. So I thought it was quite magic that they were going to get this opportunity right now to have this World Cup for the fans right into the village. I'm really surprised. Like, I can see the whole track the whole way up. They obviously tried really hard, but it has been warm. And I think the melt freeze just wasn't enough. Actually, I'm really surprised there's enough for the slalom, because from my room, I can see there's a bridge, you know, the bridge at the bottom of the slalom, the roller, where you drive underneath. You cannot see the snow and the grass depth being any different. So they've obviously got enough snow. But
maybe drilling into the mud. I want some of those muddy bases of gates.
Yeah, but I want some of those zigzags. Remember the second run last year in Chamonix? It was that zigzag run. There was one ridge in the course.
Yes.
And they used it. Do you remember they were getting AJ Giddes is like getting this airtime this way and this time. I love that. I'm really hoping we get some, you know, cool sets like that using the whole terrain, because it's just not normal that you see that.
Shemi, on that note, would you like to pick first? Who do you think is going to win?
Clément. Am I being really predictable? Oh, no. Ed didn't like that one.
No, I think that, you know, that's a decent shout. We love a Clément Noël pick, but it doesn't tend to pan out that
often. I know, but I'd like
he's
to see him
speed,
smile.
He? Yeah,
he's got speed.
Do we need
to
see
that narrow stance
from him?
Is getting narrower. Yeah, I think he's almost getting blocked by the narrow stance. Like, you see, he gets caught so much on that tail. But yeah, I think it's about time he does two great runs.
We've been saying that, haven't we, for a while? I just wonder whether we just need. He's almost too chilled. He's almost too chilled out, like Tommy Ford chilled out, like lying down.
You know who might ski well here is Maillard, especially now that he had that podium the other day. I think he needed that No, oh, you don't know. I don't know.
I just think he needs a bit more fire, and I'm not sure he's gotten the fire until he does a crap first run. That's basically has been his MO. It's been his MO all year long, apart from the Super G. It'll be good though, because I mean, when he's on point in his slalom skiing, it's so good, so good. But yeah, we'll see. Marcel, you look deep in thought there, mate. Where are you going?
I go for Stephen Amier.
What?
Wow, yes, you do. I love that. I didn't realize this was like take a risk and run with it.
Of course it is. I'm so far behind. I'm just having some random picks.
Do you know who I would really, really love to see win?
Jakob Kristoffersen.
Yeah. You still can't say his name, mate. You still cannot say his name. You've had to say it a bunch of times. You still can't bloody do it.
I said it wrong on TV as well the other day.
Pretty much every time you said it, and you take the mick out of me for not being able to say names. It's Marc Rochat, actually. You know, we talked about the emotion, didn't we? We talked about the emotion of Nils Allegra, and you could see that on Rochat's face as he was in the red chair with three to go, and then to not get on the podium, I thought was brutal.
I think he might overcook it. I think he's too hungry. I think Jakobsen's a really good call. You know, he's been working massively on psychology. Like, he's so changed his whole mindset on how to deliver a performance.
Yeah.
And he's kind of broken that puzzle down. I think that's a good call. But you didn't take it.
I'm going to go Steen Olsen.
Ooh. What about his inside shoulder? Can he keep it up?
You should have gone for Haugen. He's way better at the moment.
Well, I was torn. And then you went for a little out there. I was actually thinking McGrath, because I think this will really suit him, but I just have no idea where his confidence is at after these last few races. So I wimped out.
If you wonder why no one picks Dave Riding, it's because we don't want to jinx him, just to clarify.
Yeah.
We do think he wins, but we don't want to pick him.
That goes without saying.
Yeah. It's like the curse that we're not prepared to live by. Yeah. He's like, he's in our heart or our top hat. Have you seen his top hat? They're so cool.
His top hat?
You can buy them on Amazon.
Not Amazon. Did you just say Amazon? It's not Amazon. It's ski racing supplies. Otherwise, you're buying some fake and you're supporting someone else.
Oh, sorry.
Is it like the Joey from Friends hat? You know, the one where he goes to London?
It's so good. They sold out of the first ones.
Well, that's good.
I send you the website here on the chat. You can have a look. It's a full-on military operation here. You can have everything: the rocket, top hats, hats, everything.
I'm in.
He should sell like rocket face tattoos.
£20? Come on, Dave. For a top hat. Come on, a wearable rocket flag, the bobble hat. I like the pictures. I think the pictures of Dave are actually the best part about it. Can we get a cutout?
No,
a cardboard cutout of him.
I think we're missing a trick.
I think that
he needs some of those.
Umbrella. He needs an umbrella as well.
He does need an umbrella.
Yeah, very good.
That's been well liked, that reel of Dave and his umbrella.
You're such a fame hunter as well these days.
That was really good. No, too much. Right, guys, that is it. We have one set of races to look forward to. It is just the men's slalom coming on Sunday, and we pray for good snow so that we can see some attacking from all positions, because we've been pretty lucky in terms of later starters getting in there. So let's hope that we can do it again. Thank you very much, Shams. Nice to have you. It's about time that we dragged you along. Marcel, keep it up, buddy. Get your own catchphrase.